It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. We had all the wisdom. We had all the ignorance. We had everything with us. We had nothing with us. So these words appear in A Tale of Two Cities, written by Sir Charles Dickens in the 18th century. And he was talking about the state of Europe at that time, the two cities being London and Paris. And that's how the book starts, a very famous book. But these words seem to describe what we are going through right now. You know, it is the best of times and it is the worst of times. We have wisdom with us. At the same time, we have ignorance. We have everything with us. We have nothing with us. Why is it the best of time? Because technology has advanced so much. We have so much comfort. We can, you know, control the weather in our home. We have reached the stars. We have gone to the bottom of the ocean. We have discovered the atom and subatom. And technology has made life so comfortable for us. But are we happier? We find that unhappiness, as our comfort has increased, our unhappiness has also increased. So we are comfortable, but we are comfortably unhappy. Where's the age of wisdom, where, you know, we know everything through the one stroke of your phone? You can find out what's happening anywhere in the world. You can Google everything. And at the same time, we are ignorant about our own feelings. We are ignorant about our spouse's feelings, our children's. The distance between us, between the family members, is increasing. People are on the phone. Each one is on the dining table talking, not to the person around, but to somebody else, texting somebody else. And it seems like we have everything. But in reality, if you ask people, do you really have everything? He'll say, no, I wish I had more love. I wish I had more caring. So this problem has been there from time immemorial. And what is the solution? So our masters tell us the solution is religion. But not religion in the way that we believe or practice. In fact, religion, as you might agree, has actually caused more wars and more problems than anything else in human history. But that is because people have misunderstood religion. They have taken religion only to be the rituals or the building or my way of praying or my book. Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda Ji said, religions are many, but spirituality is one. The essential message of every religion is the same, whether you look at the Ten Commandments, you look at the values in the Bhagavad Gita, you look at the teachings of Buddha in the Dharmapada. The essential teachings of religion is what we need to understand. But what we get so hooked up on the rituals, as John was saying, one faith says, you convert to my religion or I'll kill you. Another one says, you convert to my religion or you will go to hell. So our idea of religion is so superficial. But if you practice religion as spirituality, go to the essential principles as preached by Jesus and Buddha and Shankaracharya and Gurudev, that is the solution to man's problems. Conflicts all over the world will only continue to multiply unless we get this vision of Vedanta, the vision of oneness, that there is one God, all scriptures come from him, all prophets speak about him, all books are leading us to him. So that oneness, and that oneness, not only one God, but we are all one because we are all connected. And God is not separate from me. That vision of Vedanta, unless we cultivate, we are surely headed to nuclear war. And the next war, of course, will be final. Human beings won't survive. So this message has to go out to entire humanity. And the Bhagavad Gita is making this message very clear to us, making this message very simple, because the difficult concepts of the Upanishads have been simplified. So that is why, in my opinion, this is a very practical text which teaches us how to live not only with ourselves, but how to live with others. So this message of Advaita Vedanta is taught by Lord Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita. So far we have almost done with the chapters. We are on the end of the 18th chapter. And last week we had seen that Krishna, after having completed the entire teaching of this Bhagavad Gita, he glorifies the teacher, the one who spreads this knowledge, and says that he is very dear to me. Then he glorifies one who studies. And he says he worships me with jnana yagna, which means he gives up his ignorance in the fire of knowledge. And also he prays the one who listens with faith. He says he also comes to me. So all of us are praised by the Lord in the end. Then he asks Arjuna, last week he says, has you even listened to me? I have been speaking for 700 verses, almost 700 verses, 18 chapters. Have you listened with attention, and has this knowledge made a change in you? And that is what we have to think, that have I listened to this Bhagavad Gita, not only listened but also read, that also is listening. So listen and read with attention, and then has it made a change in my life? Then only the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita is valid. So today we listen to Arjuna's reply, and it's actually a very beautiful reply, which is also the Phala Shruti. Phala means the fruit. Shruti means listening. So today we will hear what is the fruit of listening to the Bhagavad Gita. What is the fruit of studying? And this we should all see if we fit in Arjuna's category or not. Are we benefiting from this knowledge or not? So it's a very, very beautiful verse, very powerful, which gives us the entire benefit of listening to the Bhagavad Gita in one verse. So chapter 18, verse number 73.
Arjuna uvacha.
Nashto moha smritir labdha.
Nashto moha smritir labdha.
Tvat prasadan maya chyuta. Sthitosmi gata sandehah. Karishye vachanam tava. So Arjuna uvacha. Arjuna said, Nashta moha. My moha is nashta, is destroyed. Nashto, of course, because of the sandhi it is used, but it is nashta moha. My delusion has been destroyed completely. Smriti labdhva. Labdha, I have regained. Smriti means memory. Labdha means I have regained my memory. Tvat prasadat. By your grace. By whom? By me. So by me, the delusion is gone and the memory has been obtained by your grace, Achyuta. Now here, why does he use the passive tense? He doesn't say, I have gained my memory, I have removed my delusion. He says, my delusion has been removed by you. So here it shows humility. See, when we go out and do things, we say, remember, I have done this, you know, this I have done, that I. One should always say that whatever is being done through me is being done by the Lord. So that's why Arjuna uses the passive voice, which is very beautiful. He says, Nashto moha smritir labdha tvat prasadan maya achyuta. And we'll talk about what each word means. And then he says, Stito asmi. Stito asmi. Stita asmi. I am established. I am firmly established in this knowledge. Gata sandeha. And I have no doubt at all. Now, after studying the Bhagavad Gita from the Lord himself, I have no doubt. And then what happens when I have no doubt? Karishye vachanam tava. Karishye is a very powerful word, means I shall do what you say. So that is the knowledge, and that should, the knowledge should culminate in that, that whatever, Lord, you tell me, I'll do it. It is now your will, as Christ said, thy will be done, O Lord, not mine, not mine. So here also Arjuna says the same thing. O Lord, I shall do exactly what you tell me. So let us see the word, let us see a few points. So one is moha. So if you look at the verse number 73 up there, moha means delusion. Now, delusion, what is delusion? So listening to Swami Ishwarananda's commentary, he says delusion is confusion plus decision. See, one is I am confused. I don't know what is right, I don't know what is wrong, I don't know what I should do, should not do. And then what should I do? I should then clear my confusion. Maybe go to a wise person, go to a teacher, go to a guru and remove my confusion. But either I don't know that I don't know or I don't care that I don't know. I say this is how I believe, I'm going to do it. So when, as a result of confusion, we take a wrong decision, that is called delusion. So that is called wrong understanding. So Arjuna says, my delusion is gone, my confusion. Remember in the beginning of the Mahabharata, he said, I don't know what I should do, what I should not do. He was so confused. He was sitting in the bottom of his chariot because he had seen, you know, his own near and dear ones in front of him, and he said the war will create so many problems. So he asked Krishna, he says, tell me what is Shreyas, what is good for me, because at this moment I am unable to fight. He says, my mouth is dry and my hands are trembling and I cannot even hold my bow. And he sits in the bottom of the chariot and says, I shall not fight. Nayotse, I shall not fight. And then Krishna, through the 18 chapters, gives him the Krishna treatment, which not only Arjuna needs, we all need that treatment, because we all are confused about what is my goal in life, what is my purpose, why am I here, why is this world created. So that confusion is gone from Arjuna's mind. Now, why do we have confusion, or why do we make wrong decisions? So it is said because of M over I, mind over intellect. See, in our life, in our being, we have intellect, which is the seat of decision, and mind is the seat of emotions. Now, the mind receives messages from the body, from the sense organs. We see, hear, smell, taste, and touch. And the mind then gives instructions to the organs of action. Like if I see a lion coming, I'm in the forest, then the mind will recognize, okay, there is a danger, and then the order will be given to the legs to start running because danger is there. But the mind does not take decisions on its own. The mind presents the matter to the intellect, and it is the intellect, based on past knowledge, knowing that, okay, the lion is dangerous, so we should run. So then the order goes to the mind, and then the mind tells the legs. Of course, it happens so rapidly in our being, in our brain, that we don't, there's no time difference, but it is that's how the sequence is. But suppose the mind stops listening to the intellect. The example that they give is that there is a clerk in the office, and he gets all the mail from different sources. And what does he do? Close the door fully, please, so the sound doesn't go out. Thank you. So then the clerk gets the information, the mail from everywhere. So he opens the mail and presents it to the boss, to the executive. And then the executive looks at the mail and says, okay, tell this person this, tell that person. So takes all the decisions, and the clerk then passes on the decision, what the boss has given, to all the various departments. But suppose the clerk says, I don't agree with the boss, I'm going to do what I want. So the clerk, either deliberately or without thinking, disregards the boss and himself sends out instructions. Now what's going to happen? That office is going to be a mess, because the decisions will not be from the boss, but the clerk will himself decide. So when the intellect gives certain instructions and the mind doesn't follow and mind does what it wants, that is exactly what happens. And that's what happens to us. The intellect says, you know, this is right and this is wrong. But we say, come on, you know, it's okay. A little wrong, so what? Everybody is doing wrong, so what if I also do it? Or once in a while, it's okay. And it could be anything. It could be related to diet or exercise or ethical behavior or moral or honesty. It's okay if everybody cheats, I also cheat. So when the mind does not follow the instructions of the intellect and independently starts giving orders to the body, it is exactly like the clerk not following instructions from the executive, but himself deciding to do what he wants. And that is our problem, that even though we know what is right, we don't practice it. So that is called confusion, and that is called delusion. Then I heard a very beautiful Sanskrit, you know, Bhashita, they have these short sayings. So this says, Pustakaste Vidya Parakaste Dhanam. Pustakaste Vidya means knowledge in the book is the same like money with somebody else. Parakaste Dhanam. Say my neighbor has money. Is that any use to me? No, I cannot use it. Or if the money is in the, like, example is like the ladies, you know, when they have a party to go to, and because there's so many robberies, so they have put all their jewelry in the safe deposit box, right? For safety, that's very good. And then Friday evening, 6 o'clock, she says, you know what? I forgot to pick up that jewelry. And now what am I going to wear to the party, you know, Friday? So then she has to look. That jewelry lying in the safe deposit box is no use to her, or the money lying with a neighbor is no use to me. So similarly, pustakaste vidya, knowledge in the book is no use to me. See, knowledge in the book we all have. We carry these books, you know, bring it to class, take it everywhere. But the knowledge should not remain in the book. The knowledge in the book is Krishna's knowledge, Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda's knowledge. The knowledge from the book has to be transferred to my brain. Then only the knowledge is useful. Otherwise, you know, just carrying the book is not going to give you the wisdom. So the idea is that we should study this carefully. Listen to the Gita, study it carefully. So that pustak, the knowledge from the pustak should come to my brain. So that is called true knowledge. Now when Arjuna says, Smritir Labdha, my memory I have obtained. What do we mean by memory he has obtained? See, what is wisdom? First we talk, what is wisdom? Wisdom is nothing but memory, right? A collection of ideas in my memory, like as a child, you know, child puts his hand in the fire and burns it. Now he has that memory that I put my hand in the fire. So that memory becomes wisdom, so he'll never do it again. So collection, you know, other collection of memories. He was bitten by a dog, so he knows I have to be careful. Or he got hurt, or he did something wrong and in the school and he got into trouble. So these collection of memories then slowly become wisdom. So what is wisdom? It is memory that is collected. So when Arjuna says, my memory I have retained or obtained, what he has done? He has recognized, it is called recognition. It is not anything new. The knowledge of the Lord is always within us, but it is covered by ignorance. So when he says, I have retained my memory, means I have retained my wisdom. And the wisdom is what? That the Lord is within us. We all have that knowledge, but we don't think God is with us. We think of God as being far away. And that's why we do things that are undivine. If we say we are all divine creatures, we are all God's children, then we should not be doing wrong things. So that memory he has obtained, and he says, now I am awake to myself. I am awake to the self, to the Lord, which was covered, it's not that the Lord is not right us with us. Everything that we are doing is God. He's speaking, he's listening, he's thinking, but we have become ignorant to that. So when he says recognition means recognition or understanding what I already knew. And then he says, Gata Sandeha, I have no doubt. Because as we said in the beginning of the Gita, he had so many doubts. And even throughout the Gita, he asks different times questions. If you're telling me the path of renunciation is better than the path of knowledge, better than the path of action, then why are you asking me to act? You know, things like that throughout the Gita, the questions he asks. And at the end of it, he says, I have no doubt. And that is how our knowledge should be, clear knowledge. That this is what I have to do. End of story. Once I have understood the Bhagavad Gita, then there should be no discussion, no doubt. What will the Gita say about it? Any problem you have, any time in life, anywhere, all you have to do is think, what did Bhagavan Krishna say in the Gita, and your answer will be there. This is what I should do. So no doubt is where absolutely the knowledge is clear. It's like a girl who goes to, you know, kindergarten, and teacher teaches her 2 plus 2 is 4, which she didn't know before she went to school. And after that, does she ever have any doubt? Even when she's in the fifth grade or eighth grade, you know, if you wake her up in the middle of the night, how much is 2 plus 2? 4, without any doubt. And then as she goes through high school and then bachelor's and master's and PhD in mathematics she has done, then does she have any doubt about mathematics? No, everything is so clear to her that she can now teach mathematics to other high school students, graduate students, undergraduate students. So similarly, we should have a very clear understanding of what the Bhagavad Gita says, and then alone our actions will be according to that. That's why we encourage people, if you have any questions, please ask. You know, after every verse, I try to give time for people. So if you have any questions, please bring them. And that way we can all learn from each other, because the question also helps us to learn. So that's what he says. I have no doubt and karishye. I will do what? Your will. Ultimately, only God's will prevail, not mine. But what we have our personal agendas. Now, God is telling me this. Right now, I don't have time. Maybe later. Gita class, suppose your friend invites you to a party and there is a spiritual lecture by Swamiji. Now, where will you go? That clearly shows. Some people will say, lecture is okay. You know, party is his 25th anniversary. I have to go. Other person will tell the friend, look, I know you have this party. It's important. I will come, but I'll come an hour late. I'll go to Swamiji's lecture. And Indian parties anyway go on till 11, 12. So it doesn't matter whatever time you show up. So the point is that are you ready to give up something in the world for God, or are you ready to give up God for things in the world? And for us, giving up spirituality is very easy. We give that up first. Everything else is more important. My work, my children, my family, my money, my stock market, my social responsibilities, my friends, everything is more important. And we always give last importance to God. So they say, put God first and then notice the difference in your life. Once you make God as your number one priority, your whole life will change. And we are not saying you don't take care of your work or children or money or house or friends and party. All that is important. But nothing is as important as God. Not even my own body, not even my life is not as important. I'm ready to even give that up. That's what these saints were. They were ready to give up their life. If the choice is between God and giving up life, I'll choose God. I don't mind giving up the body. And we see that, you know, we see that with Jesus. We see that with the Sikh gurus who were tortured, you know, by the Muslims and killed, but they would not convert. They said, no, we will. So put God first. Put God first. Please remember that. That is the main person in my life. That is what I am here to know God, to reach God. So just decide from today onward, God, you are number one. And everything else is second. Once you do that, then you see how your life changes. And Arjuna says, this has happened by Tvat Prasadat, by your grace, Achyuta. Now, what does he mean by Achyuta? He calls Krishna Achyuta. Krishna has many names. One of them is Achyuta. Chyuta means fallen. Achyuta means never fallen. See, you and I, we are fallen. We have fallen from our divine glory because of our vasanas. And that's why we have taken birth. We have taken birth because we were all divine. We were staying with God. But then because of the pressure of our vasanas, we all took birth. So we have fallen. But the Lord does not take birth from vasanas. When Krishna appeared or Ram appeared on earth, they did not come to fulfill certain vasanas or desires. They came to uplift us. That's why Krishna says, you know, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Abhyuthanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. He says, whenever dharma goes down, goodness goes down, and adharma, the evil people go up, or good ideas go down and wrong ideas go up, then I appear. God says, I appear in every age. Either he appears himself or he appears as prophets. He appears as Buddha or Jesus or Shankaracharya. So the Lord says, I come again and again, every age. And why do I come? He says, Paritranaya sadhu nam, vinashaya cha duskritam, dharma sansthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So he says, I come in every age. Why? Paritranaya sadhu nam, to protect the good. Paritranaya sadhuna vinashaya cha duskritam, and to destroy the evil. That is the reason. And dharma samsthapanarthaya, to re-establish goodness, to re-establish dharma. I come in every age. So the Lord's birth is not because of vasanas. The Lord's birth is for our upliftment, for our benefit. And that's what we have to remember. But in Arjuna's case, what did the Lord's grace do? It created a transformation. The confused Arjuna in the first chapter, who was depressed, who was, you know, sad. And by the 18th chapter, he said, okay, I'm ready to do whatever you tell me. Now that transformation, how did it happen? By the Lord's grace. And the Lord's grace is, we have to see that it is constantly with us. Just the fact that we are all assembled and listening and talking about the Lord's Bhagavad Gita is His grace. Otherwise, there are so many thousands of people in Bakersfield. How many of them are doing this? So we should be so thankful. Thankful to the Lord and to Gurudev, Swami Chinmayananda, who has written this commentary based on which we are able to discuss this. Otherwise, this knowledge in Sanskrit, none of us, I didn't know Sanskrit when I started, you know, studying the Bhagavad Gita. Now I have studied a little bit. But it is Bhagavan's grace because of which we are here today. So only the Lord's grace and the Guru's grace is required. Then and then alone transformation happens. Now we can do so much. We can do some, but the Lord's grace is required. And for that, there is a term called Purush Tantra and Vastu Tantra. Purush Tantra and Vastu Tantra. So I'll give you an example. Say now I say, you know, can you please clear this room completely? All tables and chairs, please can you move them? So people will get up and take all the chairs and tables out. Everything is gone. There's nothing in the room. So I say, now what is in the room? Nothing. What is in the room? Just space. Empty space, right? What was the chairs and tables were there, but now the only thing we see is empty space. Now, did you create this space by moving the chairs and tables? You don't say, I created the space. Space was already there, but was covered by these chairs and tables and all the people. And when everything was moved out, we became aware of the empty space that was already there. So moving the chairs is Purush Tantra, and becoming aware of space is Vastu Tantra. So the same theory applies to spirituality. Now people say, what should I do? So we say, first purify your mind. We say, what do you mean by purify the mind? We have talked about that before. Through service, through love of God, so the practice of service, practice of love, and through the right knowledge, application of the right knowledge, we develop pure qualities in us, remove the negativities. And such a mind is said to be a pure mind, which is full of positive qualities, and negative qualities are at a minimum. Even then, the final knowledge needs the grace of God. Once you purify your mind, reduce your vasanas, and Lord, the self that is within us reveals itself to us. It's not that it's always there, but it's not revealed itself. So only in a pure mind does the Lord stay. Does the Lord is there, but the Lord reveals himself to an individual whose mind is pure. Now, when that revelation happens, is not in the saint's hand. It's not in the Mahatma's hand. Even he cannot decide, today at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm going to be realized. Not like that. You and I, we just have to keep on putting effort, keep on doing, and then just wait for the time, and at the right time, the Lord will appear. It is guaranteed to happen. But all we do is we keep on putting the effort and say, Lord, That is my desire. I want to know you. I want to see you. So, purification of the mind is Purusha Tantra, but recognizing the Lord within is Vastu Tantra. The example they give is like a fall. Say you jump from a cliff. You know, you are very unhappy and you jump from a cliff and the rocks are down below. Now, jumping is Purusha Tantra, right? It's your choice. But what happens after you fall is not in your choice. Now, either you may fall directly on the rocks or maybe a strong gust of wind might come. And even while you're falling, it may push you towards some trees. And you may fall on the trees and it may break your fall and you may not die. You may just have some bruises. So jumping is in my hand. But what happens after jumping, I cannot decide, oh, I want to fall faster or I... No, nahi hoga. It is ultimately, it is the law of gravity. So this reminds me, a man who was working on the 10th floor in the balcony and leaning over to repair something, he leaned over too much and fell from the 10th floor. And he was going down, obviously. And then on the 6th floor, the man looks out and he sees this man falling. He says, how's it going so far? So he says, so far, so good. Baad mein kya hoga? I don't know. What's going to happen afterwards? So far, it's okay. So jumping is in our hand, but what happens after that is not in my hand. So similarly, my job is to get the right knowledge, serve the world, do prayer and have love, and then surrender. And then say, Lord, thy will be done. Whenever you want it, you make it clear to me. I'll just keep on doing your work. So that is called Purusha Tantra and Vastu Tantra. Now this thing about no doubt and a complete clarity, I'd like to speak a little more about that. We should have no doubt about God's presence. Like when we are praying to an idol, right? At home we have a murti idol, or when you go to church you see Jesus or you see Krishna in the temple and all. And we think, people call it God, but it's just a stone. And some guy in Jaipur made it, 5-10 years ago, and that also was a Muslim, because majority of the artists in Jaipur are Muslim. So some Muslim made this out of stone and they brought it here and they're calling it Krishna, they're calling it God. It's okay, yeah, it may be God, but it's a stone. Then you are not going to have that faith. You have to say, this is God and God alone. God is in front of me. So when you sit and offer flowers or when you offer a candle, you say, God is standing in front of me. It's not a statue of Jesus, but it is Jesus himself who is here. It is Krishna himself. And that kind of clear faith, like this Ganpati ji, I have this small little one. I can say, oh, this is just a small little statue. But if I think Bhagwan Ganpati is here sitting with me, then how much more faith will I have in what I'm speaking? So that should be our attitude. Because first of all, somebody asked Tejomayananda ji, Guruji, who is the head of the mission, and he says, how do you say idol is God? I just think it is piece of stone. So Guruji said, okay, I grant you that. But tell me this, do you say God is everywhere? He says, yeah, God is everywhere. He said, say God is in the chair, in the humans, in the animals, plants. Yes, God is in chair, humans, animals, plants. So if God is everywhere, why is he not in the statue? If God is everywhere, he's also in the statue. The second point about the statue is that when regular prayers are offered to that statue and the Lord is invoked, we do the 16 steps where we invite God and we, give him a seat and give him water for a bath, offer him. So by regular invoking of the Lord's presence, that idol, that murti that gets empowered, it is the vibrations, the Lord's presence, it becomes more stronger in that murti and you can actually feel it. So one has to sit with full faith that God is in front of me. Same thing when we meditate, we say, I am meditating, but I'm not sure this Brahman that they meditate, they say it's formless. Where is this Brahman? Who is? Then you are not going to. So whenever you do your spiritual activities, do it with complete faith. Karishye vachanam tava gata sandeha. I have absolutely no doubt. And what is the doubt? The doubt is nitya anitya vastu. Nitya means permanent, anitya means temporary. So we don't know what is temporary, what is permanent. So in your life, pick what is permanent and give up what is temporary, and that is the goal of spirituality. So God is permanent, everything else, including me, we are all temporary. So that is the essence of this beautiful verse, that by studying the Bhagavad Gita, his delusion is gone. He has got back his memory, his wisdom. Why? Because of the Lord's grace. And the Lord is never fallen. And he says, now I am totally established in this knowledge without doubt, and I shall do whatever you tell me. So that is the beauty of this verse. It's very beautiful. That's why I took a little extra time to cover that. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha, sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kaschid dukha bhag bhave. Om shanti shanti shanti. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Hari Om.